Chapter 5. The tunnel that led from the Twilight region was a lot like the one on the other side of the spike growth. It went in a corkscrew that led up and back to the gloom. And when we found the other end, and I saw the glow of the gloom mushrooms, it was like I'd come home. The musty smell of the basilisk swamp was far behind, and I would finally get to see the lands of the Karardu tribe. The exit of the tunnel was partly grown over with ivy, and the column collected on the other side as we looked around at the forest we found ourselves in. I was struck by how different it was from the ones in the Yinny lands. The area of the gloom I'd seen was smaller than the state of Ohio, but it was so varied in its ecosystems. The trees here looked a lot like fir trees and other types of evergreens. And as the soldiers milled around, I walked over to what looked like a juniper tree that had pale bark and stiff silvery foliage. Little pink berries grew along the branches, but a lifetime spent in the woods with my father had taught me better than to touch it. So I stood and admired the strangely beautiful tree. Then a small bird with sage-green feathers landed on one of the branches and started to eat some of the berries. The little guy had a small, black crest at the top of his head, and his wings had black tips as well, with a little ruff of downy feathers along his neck and chest like a tiny scarf. "Look at you!" I chuckled as I watched the bird munching on the pink berries. The little guy stopped for a moment to cock an eye at me before it went back to his feast. Then the bird suddenly flew away, and I tried to remember every detail so I could draw him later.
"Whoa! Who goes there?"
a loud, gruff voice suddenly demanded. I jolted in surprise and looked around to try and see who'd spoken. A few yards away, a large orc in thick leather armor came out of the trees, with several other orcs and a few night elves behind him. Their leather armor was covered with metal studs, and they were all armed. None of them had their weapons held at the ready, though, and I didn't feel an immediate threat, but I kept my hand close to the Galil all the same. The orc that led saw me first and gave me a look up and down.
"You're a strange-looking one,"
the big brute rumbled. "Thanks," I replied in a dry tone. "You look nice today, too." The orc's brow furrowed in confusion, but then he looked at the rest of the force.
"Who's in charge here?"
he asked. The orc leader had long black hair that was pulled back in a low, thick ponytail, and a row of gold earrings glinted in his left ear.
"I am,"
Ekname declared in a clear voice.
"My name is Chief Ekname of the Dolrath tribe, and this is Eddie Hill, king of the Tectris Forest Goblins."
"Indeed."
The big orc shot a skeptical look my way.
"I'm Zuog, leader of the Torsbane Guard. Is there any way I may assist you, my lady?"
"I have come to see Chief Murdrak in Keteran,"
the tall night elf woman replied.
"I have some official matters I need to discuss with him."
"Then I will be pleased to escort you,"
Zuog said with a deep bow.
"Please, follow me."
The chief inclined her head, and then the column followed the guards through the forest. I made my way over to where others were and leaned toward Nylame. "Do they not trust us or something?" I asked the princess in a quiet voice. It didn't sound like that orc gave us a choice about him taking us to see the Karardu.
"It's expected,"
the dark-haired woman replied with a tolerant smile.
"None of the tribes really trust each other, even at the best of times."
"Not to mention," Bukoth added, "it wouldn't do to have the chief of another tribe attacked while they're in your territory. We are a fighting force, and if some random patrol mistook our purpose here and attacked, it could set off a war. Zuak likely has a standing order to accompany any officials who come through Torsbane to safety." "Torsbane?" I asked as we followed the column.
"It's the town that guards this entrance to the Twilight,"
Nylame answered. "Yeah," I said as I looked back at the cave entrance. "Why don't they have a wall or something like the spike growth? Seems really dangerous to have that tunnel left wide open." "I'd assume they have charms that alert them to movements in the tunnels," Bukoth snorted. "You noticed how quickly the guards came? They likely knew we were coming before we ever left the cave." We didn't have to go far before we reached the town. The forest had been cleared around the settlement of low, stone buildings, and I was struck again at the regional differences of the night elves. The Yinny built their structures from stone and wood, and they all had domed roofs, but the Karardu kept their houses neatly squared. Their flat roofs were thatched with dried branches from the fir trees, and the blocks of stone that made up their walls were sharply squared off and fitted tightly together. I also noted they all had workshops built outside of their dwellings, each one made with a different purpose in mind. The night elves and orcs of Torsbane did their work outside, I could see one Night Elf blacksmith bent over his anvil as he beat out a piece of red-hot metal, and there was another old orc woman at work on her loom. Almost no one seemed to be idle as we walked through the town. In any other town or village I'd walked through in the gloom, there'd be people who came out into the streets to watch as newcomers walked by. But in Torsbane, the townsfolk seemed hyper-focused on their daily work, and only a few glanced up curiously before they returned to their weaving, hammering, or woodworking. As we marched past the houses, I tried to get a quick look at some of the work the villagers were doing. The old orc woman worked on a very intricate pattern on what looked like linen or cotton, and there were bundles of dyed thread in a basket next to her. The weaver woman caught me as I leaned to get a peek at her work, and then she boldly winked at me. I couldn't help but smile back at her playful gesture, but I also quickly looked ahead before the saucy old broad could get any ideas. The column stopped in the town square as the Torsbane guards came to a halt. Then Zuog turned to the chief and gave her a courteous bow.
"Kindly wait here while I inform the town elders of your gracious visit,"
the raven-haired orc requested in a painfully polite manner.
"I must let them know I'll be escorting you to Chief Mardrak."
"Thank you, Captain Zuog,"
Ekname said with the same stiff formality. I watched the orc captain and several of his guards march to a larger stone building I assumed was the town's meeting house, but the captain made sure that several of his men stayed to protect us. Although the whole false courtesy bit felt really strained to me. I was a guest here, and my mother had raised me to be respectful of other people's houses, so I kept my mouth shut.
"I hate bureaucracy,"
Amrila said as she impatiently shifted from foot to foot.
"Night elves love their complicated etiquette. No offense, Nylame."
"None taken, shield sister,"
the princess smiled. "I'm taking very deep and abiding offense," Bukoth replied in a playful tone. "How could our society function without endless gestures of goodwill to hide how we really feel about each other?" "Pretty sure that's how all societies work, Bukoth," I snorted.
"How lovely it would be to live in a world where I could just say, I don't trust you and you don't trust me, so let's just keep an eye on one another,"
the red-haired general said in a wistful tone. "It would be so much simpler." I smiled at the thought and started to look around again. Some of the Torsbane guards ran drills in the yard of another large, two-story building. There were quite a few of them, and I realized this was basically a military outpost. Most of the tradespeople probably lived here just to support the garrison. But what really caught my eye was a young orcish woman who sat on a blanket with an elaborate swirled pattern woven into it. The green-skinned woman had thick, raven hair that fell in waves over her slim shoulders, and she wore a halter dress with a very low neckline that showed off the curve of her round breasts. Around her thin waist was a leather corset, and her long skirts were carefully arranged around her. The young woman also had a small black cauldron and the skull of an ink on the blanket next to her. I watched the beautiful orc as she took something in her hand and threw it onto her blanket, and I wondered if she was playing a dice game by herself. It stood out because everyone else in town seemed to be devoted to some kind of work. But then she stopped, as if she could sense my eyes on her, and looked up at me with soft, green eyes rimmed by long black lashes. When the green-skinned woman saw me, she had a strange look of recognition on her face as she stood and watched me from a distance. There was something strangely intense and appealing about the orc woman's stare. But then Zuag returned with his men, and I forced myself to avert my eyes. When I looked over, I saw the orc captain look at me, then at the pretty orc on the blanket, then back at me with a notable scowl.
"If you are ready to come,"
Zuag said as he turned his attention to Ekname,
"I will escort you to Ketaran."
"We are ready, Captain,"
the Dolrath chief said.
"Thank you for acting as our guide."
The column started to move out. I saw the pretty orc woman rush to gather up the items of her blanket, rolled them into a bundle, and then ran to catch up to Zuag. When the orc captain saw her approach, he seemed startled and stopped, which made the whole column come to a halt again.
"Oh, for the sake of the gods,"
Bukoth muttered in mild annoyance.
"What now?"
"What are you doing, Bora?"
I heard Zuag say in a harsh tone.
"I'm coming with you,"
the beautiful woman replied.
"You most certainly are not,"
the big brute snapped.
"Go back to the barracks."
"The bones have spoken,"
Bulra said as if that explained everything.
"It's not safe."
Zuag shook his head and crossed his huge arms.
"Now go back home."
I saw as Bulra's eyes flickered toward me, and then back at the orc captain.
"The bones have spoken, brother,"
the young woman repeated.
"Besides, what safer place do I have than at your side?"
Why have the gods cursed me with a shaman for a sister?
Zuag huffed.
Very well, but do not wander off to pick your berries or flowers. This is official business, and we do not have time for your mysticism. I don't care how rare of a beetle you find, we are not stopping for you to catch it.
I understand, Zuag.
The raven-haired woman said, and she meekly inclined her head. It was clear the orc captain didn't want to have this argument in front of his men and the Dolrath, and the column quickly began to move again as we marched from the town and into the forest that surrounded Torsbane. The march from Torsbane to Kedaran took about a day and a half. We stopped to camp once on a rocky plain that overlooked a cliff with a fast-moving river at its base, and Zuag seemed to keep a wary eye on me and did not let Bolra leave his side. But I was all too happy to keep to myself and spent my time with my friends. Nylamane Bakoth had taught Amreel and I a Dolrath game that involved 10-sided dice. We initially tried it with bets of copper coins, but my Zinkari wife got far too competitive when money was involved, so we stuck to bets of pebbles we found to keep things civil. It was a lot of fun to learn the new game and pass the time, and I was able to learn the Night Elf symbols for numbers up to 10. I also took another watch and got to know more of the Dolrath soldiers. Then we broke camp and started the journey to meet the Kharadu chief, and I took my usual place at the head of the Dolrath with Ekname and the others. That meant I also marched near the orc captain, and since he seemed to have developed a strong dislike for me, I tried to keep a low profile. The last thing we needed was an incident that could fuck up the meeting with Chief Murdrak. Finally, the city of Kedaran came into view. It looked a lot like Torsbane, but a hell of a lot bigger. The Kharadu's square walls were all built up around a large, central structure I could see over the thatched rooftops, but unlike the Yinni capital, there was no wall around the city, and I wondered how a place like this would fare in a war if it came to that. The Dolrath encampment was made up of tents, and I realized that was because they were warriors who accepted they could lose everything at any given time. If the tent city were destroyed, it could easily be rebuilt, and there was no need for extensive fortifications. But the carefully constructed buildings of the Kharadu must have taken ages to build. I thought about what I'd learned about the pyramids of Giza in school. The Egyptians had fitted the stones together so tightly there was no room for them to shift, and they were built to last forever. That's what the Kharadu architecture reminded me of. It might even take the long-lived elves a whole generation to rebuild if Kedaran were destroyed. Why the fuck wouldn't they build a wall to protect themselves?
There will be more ceremonial greetings when we enter the city,
Nylame told me in a quiet voice.
Mother will introduce you to Chief Murdrak. There's no need to bow because of your rank with the tribe, but you should address him as Your Grace or Chief Murdrak. The Kharadu are very formal.
Good to know, I nodded. And try not to touch anyone, Bakoth added. The mystics are very funny about touching. Anything else I should know? I asked as I started to feel apprehensive.
Just be yourself.
Nylame smiled at me.
You are kind and generous by nature, and those traits are universally admired.
And individually.
Amreela replied as she winked at the princess. Nylame blushed but didn't say anything else. The Kharadu city was the strangest I'd seen in the gloom, and as we entered, I noticed all the streets were laid out in a circular pattern that seemed to lead to the large central building. It seemed like a weird way to plan a city, but we marched on through the paved street with the Torsbane guards in front of us. Again, I saw the Kharadu people all prefer to do their work outside, but here in their capital, artisans were grouped together. We passed some potters who were all at work at different stations. Some worked at pottery wheels while others sat on the ground and painted swirling designs on large, finished pots. Two night elves worked at the kiln, and I could feel the heat off the giant oven as we marched past. Eventually, the column reached the center of the city, and I saw the massive steps that led into the tall building in the center. It wasn't really a castle or palace. It looked more like a picture of an ancient temple from a history book. The stones it was made from were a brownish-yellow color, and a great deal of time had been spent carving symbols and designs into it. A lot of swirls seemed to be a thing for the Kharadu, but it really was fucking beautiful. Zuag led the way up the steps to a large, square archway, with Bolra at his side, and I didn't see any doors to bar the way. It was just open. There was no entryway either. The arch just led into a huge chamber where night elves and orcs in robes worked at tables, or sat on the floor as they read or wrote in big, tome-like books. Further into the long room, there was a group of older Kharadu, sitting on the ground in a circle, as if they were in meditation, and I wondered if these were the city elders.
I will have to ask you to have your soldiers wait outside,
Zuag said to Chief Ekname.
Then Chief Murdrak will receive you.
The tall night elf woman turned to the Dolrath and nodded for them to leave. The soldiers left at their chief's silent command and marched back out of the building with most of the orc captain's guard. Bulra went with her brother's guard as well.
You too, Vemin,
Ekname said in a curt voice when she noticed the man in the silk robe remained where he was.
My lady,
Vemin almost sounded hurt.
Go on. We won't be long,
the Dolrath chief said in a firm tone. Vemin shot one spiteful look at me before he left to follow the soldiers, but I just grinned back at him. Once the soldiers were gone, Zuag nodded and then walked toward the elders, and as our group approached, I watched as an older night elf woman leaned toward an ancient night elf man with a long, silver beard and whisper something. The silver-bearded night elf looked up and saw us as we walked toward them, and then he nodded to the woman next to him. Without a word, the old woman stood, and so did the rest of the elders who sat in the circle. The elders silently left the central room, through the doors that led off to the sides, and only the man with the long beard remained. Ekname stopped at the edge of where the old people had been sitting, so the rest of us did the same while Zuag went over to the old man, bowed, and then helped him to stand.
Greetings, mighty Ekname of the Dolrath tribe,
the man with the beard said in a voice that wavered with age.
The Karadu welcome you as a sister and friend.
The Dolrath chief inclined her head and stepped forward.
Kind greeting, Murdrak of the Karadu,
the tall woman said in a formal tone.
The Dolrath thank you for your welcome, and I ask to sit with you for a time.
It is an honor to host such honored guests,
Murdrak smiled.
May I have the pleasure of knowing the names of your strange friends.
Holy fuck, was this formal. I suddenly felt very out of place. My dad had taught me plenty of good manners, but this shit was on another level.
You know my daughter, Princess Nylame?
Ekname gestured to the dark-haired woman.
And General Bakarth, one of my greatest warriors. And this is Shield Sister Amrila, a fierce and charming Zenkari. And my tall friend here is Eddie Hill, King of the Tectrus Forest Goblins, Slayer of Basilisks.
Impressive company,
Murdrak said with a twinkle in his pale blue eyes.
King of Goblins, or Vampire of the Gloom, you have quite a reputation before you, your highness.
I was surprised for a moment, but I guessed Ersinger's pamphlet campaign had gotten all the way to the Karadu territory, too. Just Eddie is fine, your grace, I replied with an embarrassed grin.
Such humility,
the old man said with an approving nod.
But there is an aura of greatness about you as well. I expect you will do even greater things than slaying basilisks.
It was really just the one, Chief Murdrak, I replied modestly. And I had help.
Come and sit,
the old chief said as he chuckled at my remark.
I would know what has brought you here today.
The six of us sat while Zuag helped Murdrak back to the ground. Then the orc captain bowed to his chief and quietly left. I looked around and saw the scribes I'd seen when we came in had also left. Then some servants came in with trays of tea and ceramic bowls of fruit, served us and left again.
I'm afraid it is dark business that has brought us to you, Murdrak,
Ekname said as she sipped the delicate cup of tea she'd been given.
There is reason to believe Ersinger may have broken the treaty that keeps the gloom in balance.
This is dark news indeed,
the silver-bearded man said in a solemn tone.
What has the Mad Chief done now?
Conspired with a demon lord from the deeper dark,
Ekname answered.
Eddie, perhaps you're the best one to share the story.
Way to put me on the spot, Chief. It's a long story, your grace, I said as I looked the old man in his piercing eyes. But the short version is that I got some information from a source I trust, and the information said Ersinger might have made a contract with this demon lord. So some of my friends and I broke into his private retreat and found the evidence to prove it.
Or so we think,
Ekname added in a cautious tone.
They found a scroll written in the language of the demons. We were wondering if you or one of your scholars might be able to read it.
I do not wish to assume,
Murdrak said as he looked at Amrila.
But could your lovely Zinkari friend not translate it for you?
The horned woman had a mouthful of berries from one of the bowls next to her, and she looked up with an embarrassed expression. Amrila had obviously assumed no one expected her to speak, so she happily ate the snack provided.
I couldn't read it, your grace.
The red-skinned woman replied as she delicately covered her mouth and tried to swallow the half-eaten berries.
It's written in a very old form of Enochian.
I understand,
the bearded man said with an amused smile.
Is the document with you?
I have it here, Chief Madrak,
Bakoth said as he pulled out the scroll from his bag. Chief Ekname entrusted it with me for the journey. As the red-haired general handed the scroll to the old man, I wondered if Ekname had given it to him because she didn't trust Vimin not to go through her things to find it. The silver-haired man took the scroll and read it over as he shook his head, and when he finished, the old guy had a dark expression on his wrinkled face.
This is very troubling,
Murdrak said as he rolled it up and handed it back to Bakoth.
I am not even sure if Ursinger himself is aware of what he's gotten himself into.
My mind went back to the clearing near the retreat, when I'd seen the monstrous way Ursinger had looked, the way the mad chief's swollen muscles had bulged and stretched, and how his amulet had been half sunken into his pale blue skin. He's being possessed by a demon, isn't he? I blurted out.
I would guess as much.
The old man gravely nodded.
It appears we must do something before our beautiful caves are plunged into chaos by his folly. This could not have come at a worse time.
What do you mean, Murdrak?
Ekname asked in a concerned voice.
The eastern reaches of my territory have been attacked by an orc bandit with an army at his back.
The bearded man sighed.
The Kuradu have great abilities, but magic comes at a great cost. I too am bound by the great treaty of our people. I've sent emissaries to Ursinger and asked for help. Now I know why he has failed to respond.
How bad is it, Your Grace?
Bakoth asked.
He has raised a large fighting force and is trying to take over the eastern portion of my territory.
The old man replied.
He says it is time for elven tyranny to end, and wishes to set himself up as chief. My only true standing fighting force is the guards of Torsbane, and they are duty-bound to guard the entrance to the twilight.
A thought suddenly struck me, and I raised my hand. I think I might be able to help you with that, Your Grace.